Hello, friend, and welcome. Our episode today, 515, is with Kirk Richardson, a shop owner tactician who is growing. And he gives you some of his strategies on making sure you let your people run your business. I'm calling this episode Striving for Greatness.
You can get talented people for sure. I'm not saying you can't. I'm saying you better sort of set the bar at a different level as you're trying to grow.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, welcome, Carm Capriotto, the Automotive Aftermarket Podcast guy. Hey, thanks for being here and for supporting the shows. These audio workshops are designed for the automotive aftermarket using the pure and basic mode of delivering information from professionals to professionals. Hey, thanks for being a loyal listener. Now, I hope you're getting your share of new insights and ideas, and if you share it with a friend and help make a difference in our industry, you, of course, help all ships to rise. Hey, Remarkable Results Radio is so proud to partner with Napa Auto Care and the 2020 Napa Expo. The finishing touches are being implemented, and when you join Napa, including suppliers, industry experts, and your peers in Las Vegas, April 6th through 9th, 2020, you'll have the best and the latest news, industry information, and the hottest trends. Hey, I'll be there. Please look me up. Hey, we produce three different aftermarket shows each week, and you'll need to subscribe to each of them, but only and just once. And yes, they're free to subscribe and listen. Go to a special page on my website, remarkableresults.biz/listen, to get the links to your favorite app for your phone. Now, if you earn your living in the auto service aftermarket, you sure don't want to miss any of these podcasts. Hey, in this episode, I'm with Kirk Richardson, South Street Auto Care, Rochester, Michigan, who bought his first three-bay shop at the age of 24. 7 years later, he bought his second shop, and he continues to add stores as recently as last year. In this interview, Kirk opens up on his growing pains, store growth, culture, and hiring talent, among so many more great shareable insights. Kirk works hard on his culture, and he knows that he must surround himself with people who can counteract his weaknesses. The culture Kirk molded throughout the years as an entrepreneur is a blend of hard work, accountability, and fun, which combine to make loyal and dedicated coworkers for him. Find Kirk Richardson's bio, the show notes, and links to his previous episodes at remarkableresults.biz/E515. Hey, you know I'm creating and curating podcast content to make your life easier. It's a personal challenge that I'm willing to make for success and improvement in you. Hey, a warm welcome to my friend Kirk Richardson from South Street Auto Care, Rochester, Michigan. Hello, Kirk.
How you doing, Carm?
Good, man. We were on the 500th together. Thank you so much for doing that. And you said something that kind of, I couldn't stop thinking about it. Then you and I think we spoke the next day and we said, I think you're onto something here, because, you know, so much of what we do on the podcast and so many of the people that we get on are big, successful shops that have talked about the fact that here's where I was and here's where I am today. And, you know, you and I said, I think we need to bring this down a notch or two and stop and remember. Kirk says to me, I remember when I was doing 200,000. And then I ask him the very most important question. I says, were you a technician doing that or were you a businessman? And he said, I was a businessman. And I said, wow, that is so interesting for you to come in and tell the story of, I guess I want to grow my shop to be this big. I'm not quite sure how I do it. And all these other guys, I'll never get there that quick, that fast. And I said, we have to look at your perspective from the old days to now.
First of all, thank you for what you do for our industry. I listen and I hope I come on here and provide value to somebody. My first shop was a three-bay little shop. I bought it the year before I bought it. It did $208,000 in total revenue. That was how big it was. And there was one employee. I spent years sort of languishing around, not understanding, you know, so you said, was I a businessman? I was a businessman, and I sort of had I wasn't very good, and I wasn't a very good manager, and I wasn't a very good leader. And I don't know if I am now. I'm certainly better. But I spent a lot of time thinking in this little three-bay shop, oh, I'll grow it. I'm going to turn it into something great. And you know, my nature is sort of, we're going to show up and we're all going to be great. And it's my way or the highway. And that proved to be not very useful in a three-bay shop. That proved to be unbelievably stressful for me because the bar was set so high. And really what I needed was somebody to just show up and be consistent.
Wait, wait, you set the bar.
I did in my own brain, right? I had this, I'm after greatness, and everybody I hire better like be on that train. And the reality is most people aren't on that train. And I don't mean that negatively. I just mean, you know, if you sit down and say, people, why do you come to work? It's not what you generally don't hear is for greatness. You know, they go, because I want to pay my mortgage or I want to feed my family.
You had to teach people how high your bar was and then help them get there.
No, I had to lower my bar, honestly, because when you want to grow a three-bay shop and you don't have any cars and you need humans to help you do that, you can't look at everybody and go, you better be great. And you can't look at everybody in a 13-person shop and say, you better be great. If you think I can go out and get 13 people that are all great and they wake up every day and say, I want to be great, I don't, that's few and far between. I said, this is at my big shop. It's a 13-person shop, 8 technicians, 4 service advisors, a manager. This is right when I first took over, probably 6 months in. I said, hey, guys, what motivates you? Like, I want you guys to all write down individually what motivates you. Like, what gets you out of bed in the morning? There was one person who said, being great at what I do. And that was at the time, Jim was 60, was a 60-year-old man who said, I don't do this for money. I don't need the money. I'm doing this because I show up, I enjoy the challenge, and I want to be great at this every single day. The other, I know at the time I probably didn't have 13, but you know, the other 10 people, how many ever there were, said something like, to feed my family and to pay my mortgage. They weren't inspired by greatness. They weren't on the path to being the greatest technician on the planet. That wasn't reality. And when I had my three-bay shop, and that's what I was gunning for every day, I'm burning through people like crazy. And I look back on it now, and the reality is, those people could have helped me grow my business. But I was so gung-ho on we're going to be the best and we're going to be the greatest. And the reality is I could never keep people around, not because I was mean to them, but because I just set the bar so high. And the reality is in a three-bay shop, do you know how hard it is to bring talented people in? There is this, so if I'm talented and I know I'm talented, I get to choose, right? So I'm out on the job market. I'm out on the open market. You call Kirk's Auto Care, a little three-bay shop. I go, come on down. And I said, show him my shop. And he goes, okay, so three bays, you're doing 60 cars a week. Okay, so I can go to a 10-bay shop that's doing 120 cars a week. And at the 120 cars, I'm going to have more opportunity. There's just no way around that, right? So some of these are these realities of you have a small shop. You can get talented people for sure. I'm not saying you can't. I'm saying you better sort of set the bar at a different level as you're trying to grow. Once you've established yourself, raise that bar up. Once you got a three-bay shop doing 800 grand, yeah, of course.
So you dropped your bar, but part of dropping your bar was it that you realized you had to take the people with you?
Yeah, 100%. And I wasn't going to take, they weren't going to come in and be me, or they'd go own their own shop.
That's big.
Right? So I'm looking at everybody going, you better wake up and read Investor's Business Daily, and you better wake up at 6 o'clock and go and exercise. And then when you go home, you better at 6:30 be out of the shower and head over to Starbucks to build your business. And like, this is how I thought the world and everybody around me should have worked. And that was me being flawed. And that was just awful thinking, honestly. But, you know, and most people aren't that way who have three-bay shops.
But Kirk, bring me to the day that you faced that real reality and said, you know, I'm glad I did all this strategic think and this work and tried to make people in the effigy of me. But what happened that brought the humbleness so that you could really get a handle on that real growth?
I wanted to be able to take care of people more than I wanted to say were some version of my greatness. You know, and you know, we could get into what that definition is, but I sort of looked at it and I said, that's not reality. And, you know, I've yet to bump into the person who wants to do the things I want to do. Meaning what I need to do is adjust. I'm the one who needs to look at these people and go, actually, you know what the reality is? They're actually very valuable to my business. No, they're not as hardworking as I am. They're not as interested in being great at whatever it is they're doing as I am. And, you know, I really had to tone that down and go, yeah. If I want to grow a business, I really need to look at, you know, managing the numbers. I really need to set expectations. I really need to say, these are the things I need you to meet. And even in that, in a small shop versus a big shop, there's a big difference. Because in the small shop, you can't sort of rule with the iron fist. You sort of take some of the good with the bad. Because if you're running a three-bay shop, and you got two technicians, right? And let's, for simplicity, say they're both producing 45 hours a week. If you lose one of them, you just lost 50% of your production. And in a three-bay shop, you know, to lose one technician, which is 50% of any shop to lose 50% of its production, has got problems, obviously. But in a three-bay shop, lose 50% of your production and the net dollars on that operation are so small, you're underwater. You're losing money. And, you know, you don't want to go and fix cars, or you don't want to be the new service advisor, because that doesn't allow you to grow your business. So you forever have to be elevated above, you know, fixing cars and selling service, because you want to grow your business and that's the way you're going to do it. But you have to do it with people, which means you got to sort of bend and give and take. And, you know, I mean, I wrote down the word family. Lots of smaller shops use language such as family. And I think maybe lots of bigger shops do. I stay away from the word family. If I was a smaller shop, I would be, and I became far more family oriented, meaning, yeah, I have to be involved, and we have to sort of trade on some of, you know, me and the people that I work with, we have to trade on some of the, we're emotionally tied. Because I'm not going to inspire you to greatness, because I just need you to show up and give me the 45 hours. And if I can get the 45 hours from this guy and I can get the 45 hours from that guy, I can go and get more cars. I can hire my next service advisor. I can hire my next lube tech. And I just started really looking at this from the mathematical standpoint.
Was that awfully cold?
No, it was almost the opposite. It was almost the opposite, because cold was this, don't give me your excuses because I don't want to hear them, because you should be striving for greatness.
But family to me, you know, love, culture, all that stuff, you're good at that. But in the early days, you weren't good at it? Is that what you're saying?
I was learning, sure. Yeah, no, I wasn't nearly as good. I don't like the word family. I mean, you know, sort of a different topic, but I don't like the word family. I fired my family. I heard my sister one time. You know, she didn't make it for a few reasons, you know, but, you know, I got a business to run. So
let me ask you a question about family. Do you care for the fact that you have all these, you know, team members that you pay, you provide a living to, and then they have that extended family? I mean, how much responsibility you have?
So we're now at 73 people, so you're aware. So no, that's enormously important to me. And it was important to me on day one. But for me on day one in my little three-bay shop, I just thought, you better be me and you better care the way I care and you better put the effort in that I put in, or you got to go. People say to me, oh, why don't you own a bunch of shops, or you could own 10 shops, or, you know, what do you want to do? And I go, and we've had this conversation. I've tried to buy a business. I want to buy a business where I can have like 25 to 40 people in one location and really care for them and their families well. There's nothing more important to me. But what I thought when I was small and I walked in, I was the bull in the china shop. You better do it the way I'm doing it, because I got life figured out, which is wrong. And that's not the advice I want to give people. And most people don't approach managing their small shop in that way. But for me, that was my problem. But it did take, and whatever your problem is, it did take for me to realize, no, I got to tone some of that down, which really doesn't have much to do with the difference between managing a big and a small shop.
Hey, it's Carm here to tell you about the best shop management solution for your auto care center, Trax Enterprise. Now, since NAPA introduced Trax in 1989, it's been the industry's leading shop management system out there. Today, Trax Enterprise offers even more of the features auto care center owners want. Things like a powerful interactive scheduling calendar, faster and streamlined workflow, multi-shop capabilities, easy pay consumer financing integration, and more. That means you can count on Trax Enterprise to help drive your success today and well into the future. The tabbed interface lets you open and view multiple estimates, ROs, invoices, and purchase orders, all at the same time. You can even place windows side by side, over or under, or drag a tab from another application outside Tracks to open another window. One Auto Care Center owner said he loves being able to have 10 to 12 work orders open at once. Enterprise also offers a Microsoft Outlook type calendar so you can view daily, weekly, and monthly schedules, drag and drop appointments between days and times, and block time to indicate length of work. Punch out to Mitchell Pro Demand is another huge benefit. It provides embedded labor, part, maintenance, and fluid capacities that can be transferred to estimates and repair orders within Tracks. Tracks Enterprise also streamlines parts ordering. Just one click and it's done. The mobile capture app sold another auto care owner on Tracks Enterprise. He said there's no reason to write VINs by hand anymore. You can decode the VIN from a mobile device and send all the information directly to Tracks. There are reporting features too. For example, with just a couple of clicks, you can find out how many repair orders you've written in a month. Talk to your Napa Auto Parts store and find out more about what Tracks Enterprise can do for you, plus the hundreds of other great things the Auto Care program has to offer. What I'm curious about is how do we get the $400,000, $500,000, $800,000 shop who would really, you know, go back to your position. They have opportunities. They've got some entrepreneurial spirit going. They still may be turning wrenches. How do we give them the insights that the change that's necessary that you went through or that they need to plan on in a CEO role that they just have no clue what it is and how it works because they feel that they're stuck somewhere in the role that they currently have for years now. They really don't see light.
I would say something like you have to forever be making moves to get yourself out of the day-to-day business. You just have to. You also have to understand the numbers of that. You have to understand how when you say, you know, you got $1 million shop, right? And you could say something like, my compensation or my wages paid out fully loaded should be $300,000. Well, now you need to budget and appropriately say, how do I staff based on the size, based on the car count, based on how many advisors I need? And then I can remove myself from that. But I say something like this. If you have 8 to 10 people, you have a full-time management job. And once you get past 10 people, It is a legitimate full-time job to just be a manager of 10 people. You know, how are you doing? How's it going? Do you have all of the resources that you need? Am I making sure that I'm putting you in the very best position to be successful at the role that you have agreed to, you know, take on? And you have to check in on your people. You have to sit down with your people. You have to track your people. You have to assess your people. You have to talk to your people. That's a full-time job. And, you know, so how do you go from the $700,000 shop? Well, you do some math, you sort of budget, and you figure out ways to extract yourself from the day-to-day so you can start to think about the components or the pieces of your business, which in the end is just the people. It's just the people. Right? The components of your business are the people. And how do you manage them? How do you incentivize them? How do you encourage them? How do you discipline them? And you're going to discipline dramatically different in a $700,000 shop than in a $2 million shop.
Where did you learn how to do this, the people side of the business, the people leadership side? Did you cram a course? Did you read books? What did you do? Because I think you may have just broken the code where so many service professional shop owners today have the fear of making a lot of really big, important people moves that they know they have to. What did you do?
My job as the leader or the manager is to make sure I am doing what is good for the most amount of people in my organization. The people that I work with entrust me to make sure I am putting the best people around them, to make sure I'm getting them the most amount of cars to fix, to make sure I'm doing all of the things I'm supposed to do as a leader and manager. And one of them being firing people. One of them being creating an environment that allows them to show up to work and be happy and productive. I think there's no more important job for me as the leader. And I firmly believe that, which I thought when I was running my little three-bay shop at the beginning, I thought the way you do that is by basically only getting the best of the best and the most talented hard workers on the planet. And that just stifled any growth. I didn't grow for a long time.
Yeah, and there's only one Superman, so you were in a tough shape.
Yeah, there's no Superman. I mean, in the end, you know, it took for me to really realize I'm not Superman. I'm not hiring Superman. That doesn't exist, you know, and really sort of modifying the way I did that. But I will say this, I'm now back to a little bit more of an iron fist when I have a 13-person shop. Force some very, I think, almost survival reasons.
Yeah, but you only need an iron fist or a being a tough leader to the manager of the facility.
Yeah, it's not tough. It's I make you follow the rules, right? So now, this is where I think the really interesting thing in this is for me in this discussion is something like that guy who's doing $800,000, who's making a good living, you can make a living at $800,000. Nothing wrong with an $800,000 shop. Who's pining to be that $2 million shop? The amount of change that has to happen as a leader, as a manager, as a developer of talent, as a developer of skill is pretty dramatic. It really, really is. And in an $800,000 shop where you might have five people working, you can sort of make individual decisions for each person that comes to you. Right? And it's very easy to massage and manage and know what this person needs and what that person needs and figure out how to take the four people you're working with and give this one special treatment and that one special treatment and people are going to hear special treatment. And I just mean let the rules vary for each individual. And it's sort of much easier to manage and control and massage and make it right. It's not so easy when you got 13 people. It's far more challenging when you have 13 people. And when I say iron fist, I just mean, hey, I have rules. I've written them down. I expect you to follow them. And we as a company, and by company, I just mean the people I work with. That's what I think a company is.
Iron fist for you is a metaphor. And, you know, it basically says this, guys, we wouldn't be here if we didn't have processes and rules and systems. And you know what? I'm going to monitor the heck out of them. And I'm going to make sure that we're on it because I know I don't want to go backwards. And I know I want to go forward. And that's the only way we're going to do it.
But in my three-bay shop, I wanted to do that. And I realized that's not going to, I have to be a little bit more pliable. I have to be a little bit more flexible because if I want to go from 200 to 800, yeah, I'm probably going to have to deal with some of this inconsistency.
So the story of change, you know, I think you just nailed it right there. If I'm going to go from 800 to 2 million, if it's working now, great. But if your goals are that lofty over, say, a 3 or 5 year period, and you're not willing to change, Mr. Leader, change and learn, be more accountable, then it's just a pipe dream.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you have to adapt. I mean, and now you say something like, if you buy a trans jack, $1,000 trans jack in a 3-bay shop, that's super meaningful for some months is the difference between being, you know, cash flow positive and cash flow negative. In a $2 million shop, certainly could be the difference between being cash flow positive and cash flow negative. But if it's ran well, it's not. So now you're making different types of management decisions, right? And $1,000 transjack doesn't become nearly as I don't want to say it's inconsequential because it's not inconsequential, but it doesn't have the same impact. Doesn't have the same, you don't have to spend the same amount of time hemming and hawing about should I buy a $1,000 transjack?
Your evolution.
You do have to spend a lot more time thinking about what's the right insurance package for my 13 people. Are we at a point where I can offer life insurance? Are we at a point where I can up the retirement contributions? Can I switch from a simple IRA to a 401k, which gives you some flexibility? These are some things I'm playing with right now. You know, as I, you know, grew from 13 people to essentially 20 people in a smaller shop. You know, you sort of do the simple IRA and you don't have a ton of money there and the margin's pretty thin. You get to that $2 million shop and now you have to make some different decisions. You also have to learn. Let me tell you what I knew about 401ks 10 years ago. Nothing. when I bought my first shop 14 years ago, that was the furthest thing from my mind. And I was buying tire machines and it was life and death to me. You know, now I buy a $7,000 tire machine and I go, business needs a $7,000 tire machine. I don't spend a ton of time thinking about it. It's not life and death, but that health insurance really is life and death to me because I want my people to be taken care of. I want to make sure they have a good product. I want to make sure they're getting good value. Well, I had to learn those things and it wasn't fun. I don't love life insurance or health insurance. It's not fun.
I don't blame you. I absolutely don't. But, you know, some people are underinsured and they're under everything because they're unwilling to go out and get some really good advice or find some great advisors. so appreciate where we are right now in this conversation. I know listeners out there saying, okay, how did you evolve? How did you do this? Where was the confidence builder? How did you put your ego on the shelf and overcome your fears? Was it a coach? Was it books? Was it night school? Was it networking? What helped you see around the next corner?
So lots of training. I mean, I've hired multiple consultants throughout my career, industry specific, non-industry specific. I love accountability partners. I'm a super hardworking guy. I enjoy accomplishing things, and I don't know if anybody enjoys that more than me. And I'll even slough off. I'll get lazy. I go, man, I'm not accomplishing enough things. I'll go and hire somebody that I got to talk to on the phone once a week to go, yeah, I didn't get it done. You won't ever hear me say I didn't get it done. But I can say it in my own brain and really understanding some of my weaknesses and going, hey, I need to A, develop that, or B, hire against that. Meaning, I got to go find some people that are essentially somewhat counter to me. You know, I am, you know, I mean, in every personality profile, I am the guy who just is, you know, Myers-Briggs and DISC. You know, I'm that hard-driving, hard-nosed, get things done pragmatist. That wears on some people. And it obviously got me in trouble. And I had to tone that down. And as I've grown, I've now got a 13 base shop. I can go and hire against some of that. And I strategically hire against some of that to offset some of my, we got to go. And, you know, really went and found some people who go, yeah, let's focus on the human first, right? Like we want to accomplish some things, but I'm here to focus on the human first. And they reset me, right? And I go, yeah. Yep. Thank you. I was focused on the human. I just wasn't doing it in the right way.
So you got that human piece. You understand that as a leader, but you're not good at it. So here comes someone to keep the bookend right.
Yeah, I'm mechanical about it. You are always going to have a good place to come and work. You're never going to get yelled and screamed at. I'm going to make sure you have all of the resources to do your job well. I'm never going to hire any people who are jerks. I'm going to hire the best of the best that I can. And if they're not good, we're going to train them into something that is good. But it's almost all this mechanical. You're going to have wonderful health insurance. You're going to have wonderful retirement. That's sort of this mechanical. And I sit down with everybody and I want to help them with their budgets. And I want to, you know, help them with their finances. And I want to sort of do whatever I can to help them with their wives, like I'm some pro on marriage counseling or something. I'm awful. But it's a lot of the mechanical where, you know, our service manager, who unfortunately is no longer with us, but he is the guy who, and I mean this, when he heard your dad died, right, he hurt as bad as you hurt. And he was the first guy to come and talk to you and give you a hug and say, what can I do for you? And what do you need? And how do we help you? And I'll do all that. I don't do it with the same warmth.
Gino Wickman's book, Rocket Fuel, you know, basically described, hey, listen, you need to have a visionary and you need to have, you know, left brain, right brain people. And you're smart enough to know that.
Yeah. You know, someone smart told me. You intuitively know some things, you're just not very good at executing them. And it took somebody really going, hey, dummy, if you don't start, because I am so strong in the things I'm like, the things I am, I so am, and I'm them all day, and it never turns off.
Tell me about the guys that work for you. I mean, do you streak by, whew, wow, there goes Kirk, or do you stop? Do you say hello?
I talk to every one of them. I like them. You know, I like them. I enjoy them. I want to know what's going on in their life. I'm not the first person they call when they, you know, when stuff doesn't, when they need an emotional, a hug. I'm not that guy. You know, I'll hug you and I hug everybody, but I'm not warm and fuzzy about it. I want to show you that I care for you. And now let's solve some things.
If I lived close enough to you, I could be hired as the hugger. And, you know, he says, wait a minute, we'll call Carmel, come in.
I go and hire huggers, right? I hire against the things I just don't do naturally. Yeah, because to say I'm going to go and hire a bunch of people, I'll use an engineer. I mean, that's just a, you know, I know that's a poor term, but I'm going to go hire a bunch of engineers that are, you know, the prototypical accountants and engineers that are the analytical brains and, you know, are not the warm, fuzzy people. There's not many engineers and accountants in this world, actually. And there's lots of different people and lots of different things that are appreciated from a company. And, you know, I want to the best of my abilities, I don't want to say satisfy all of them, but be able to be dynamic in our leadership and our management. And meet people in the spaces that they need to be met. You know, and when your dad dies, yeah, I want to do everything I'm good at. And I want some people in the building and in leadership and management to go, hey, you know what I'm really good at? Just giving you a hug and caring for you in a non let's get things done way.
I'm really enjoying this discussion, and I would really like to put a bow on it.
Well, so let's think about this. If I have a shop where I'm doing 800,000, I am perpetually one person away from a job. Meaning, if I push the wrong button, or I push too hard, or I make the person hit the eject button, or I've pushed them too far, I've turned the heat up too much, you know, you finally got yourself, you got the right people hired, you can go and run the business to grow it and make all the right decisions, and now you made one person mad and that person walks out the door. Well, now you have a problem. Meaning, in my 13 bay shop, I can push and I can push and a person walks out. I mean, my 13 person shop, I can push and a person walks out and we don't even miss a beat. And we really don't, right? I got enough 7 other technicians to sort of offset that loss. We don't work a ton of hours. We can adjust hours, things of that nature. So at that 750, when you're perpetually one person away from a job, a full-time job, meaning your service advisor walks out, I'm now standing at that counter 40 hours a week. That's a totally different game, right? And getting the most out of those people while not turning the heat up for them to walk out the door is a delicate balance. It's a very delicate balance. Sometimes you just force them to walk out the door because you fire them and you go, you're not the right fit. But you're going to put up with some more stuff because the goal is to go from 800 to 1.5. You will never get the 1.5 without people, without adding more people, right? Without, you know, sort of taking some of the flack that you say, when I'm doing 2 million, I won't accept this. And really having an understanding of what you're willing to tolerate at 750 versus what you're willing to tolerate at 2 million. Because the reality is, I think there's lots of shop owners who say, I want to be 2 million, and they're sort of doing everything they can to get there. And the reality is, they'll be a lot happier at 800,000.
They weren't built for it.
They weren't built for it. And I see shop owners all the time. I mean, I work with a guy and he'll listen to this podcast. I'm not sure he was built to own a, he owns, his two shops do lots of top end revenue. I'm saying, and I've said that he might be happier owning an $800,000 facility. He might be happier because the things you need to do to have a large, and he has a large organization at this point. I don't think he likes doing. I genuinely think he dislikes doing them. And I think he likes doing the things that would run an $800,000 shop to perfection.
Yeah, but my advice would be hire the right person and don't do what you don't like to do.
So exactly. And that's sort of my point, meaning you need to assess, if I want to go do 2 million, I'm at 800 and I want to go do 2 million, what are all of the things I need to evolve into when I do 2 million? And do I actually want to be those things? Is it natural for me to be those things?
What are your strengths and what are your weaknesses as a leader and as a person? And God Almighty, if you're going to go out and have to become the quintessential marketer so the phone rings, because that's the only way the $2 million mark's going to hit, and you can't stand social media, you can't stand marketing, you don't even want to think about, then you better hire somebody or 800,000 and love the neighborhood.
Exactly. Right. And I see shop owners. I mean, my wife went through this. She wanted to own a business. And I think a lot of it was, you know, almost essentially societal pressure to say, well, you should always trying to be grow. You should always be trying to have a $2 million shop. And I'm going to tell you, like, there's lots of shop owners who, if they had an $800,000 shop, really sort of took care of the people that they had, really honed that thing in, they'd have a great life and enjoy that a bunch more than striving to have a $2 million shop. And understanding the differences, but also understanding that if you want to go to 2 million, you're going to have to accept some things that you wouldn't accept at 2 million to get to 2 million.
Big change, big evolution. You may have to be taken kicking and screaming over the line if you're not good at any of that stuff. And I think that's where people, and there's a lot of $1.5 million shops that don't make any money. I mean, the volume came in, but they don't know how to manage everything else.
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, one of the other things is, you know, for a small shop who wants to grow, you're tempted to overpay, right? You're tempted to overpay to keep people present. That will stymie all of your growth. So you say, hey, I want to go from an $800,000 shop with 5 people to a $2 million shop with, you know, 11 people. Guess what? The reality is, if you start to overpay to keep people in the building to grow, you need dollars. know, this organic growth, yes, you can grow organically over 30 years. I'm talking, you want to grow from 800,000 to 2 million in 3 years. You got to have money. So it's very tempting to overpay. One of the key ways to never overpay is perpetually recruit. Right? We've had sort of a conversation about this. So you want to go from 800 to 200 or to 2 million, you better love recruiting. Or you better go find somebody who does. And an $800,000 organization, it's hard to find people who love to recruit. You're just getting by to hire people to run the show. And guess what? You want to maintain a $2 million shop? You better love recruiting.
You know, that's a great tactic to end with, because I'm going to end. And here's why I'm going to end. I'm afraid that if I just sit here and listen and converse and write my notes and keep going, it'll be 2 hours and it'll be 3 hours. And, you know, so here's a standing offer, you know, get through some of your hurdles in opening the new shops and, you know, and let's do this again. Okay.
Yeah, and I'll be more organized because I really, you
no,
know.
No. Frankly, it was good. Don't say you had to be more organized. This was good. I loved it. I enjoyed it. In fact, you know, as I interview every single one of my podcasts, I'm always not only worrying about the flow, paying close attention, I'm also listening over here as my listener. And I do believe you dumped an awful lot of value and things to think about.
I don't love theory, right? Which we've gotten to a lot. I love tactics.
Well, this was the theory episode on growth. And now we'll ask you to bring in, tactics. Tactics could be fun.
And that is, if I have a usefulness, I think, to people in the industry, it is probably tactics. Cool. I like tactics. I'm a flow chart. So I'm the engineer guy. Right? That's what I am. I'm an accounting major from Michigan State. Like, I love tactics. I love strategy. So,
if anyone wants to hear about one of his tactics, go listen to episode 500. And when Kirk talks all about his ungodly big spreadsheet on how he pays his people out of gross margin. And that was a great episode. And I so love the fact that you'd be willing to help anybody do that.
And by the way, I have talked to, and I don't think I'm exaggerating if I say 40 people about my pay plan over the last 5 years. And, for anybody out there who wants to talk about it, I have a whole package. I send it out from your show. I'm pretty sure I've talked to 5 people.
Wow. That's just a week ago, I think. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. So, that's wonderful. And it's so cool that you're willing to give. Kirk Richardson is the name. You could run him on my on the website and in any of the search bars. It's truly, truly worth a listen to to Kirk's wisdom. Thank you, Kirk Richardson, South Street Auto Care, Rochester, Michigan, for this wonderful episode. We'll do it again.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.